You're listening to the She Lift Project podcast, a show dedicated to helping women achieve higher levels of success in the workplace. No matter where you are in your career, we want to help you grow. Now here's your host, Cynthia Kirkpatrick, a CPA, CFP, and senior financial advisor at Moneta Group.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the She Lift Project podcast. I'm Cynthia Kirkpatrick and thank you for joining us today. We have Tamara Keefe, who is creative idea generator extraordinaire, founder of Clementine's Nice and Naughty Creamery. I love it. And you know, your journey, your business success didn't start necessarily in the ice cream business, but a journey traversing many different professional worlds, I'm sure, and side bending. And so I'm really excited to hear the full story today and to share with everybody the wisdom that you're going to bring to us, I know for sure. But lots of accolades, lots of awards, actually. One of the most recent, right, flavor of the year, 2023?
Yes, we won the best ice cream in America. Yes, yes, that was very exciting.
I have to ask, and we'll get into the whole story. Sorry, I'm just jumping into here. Is that kind of like the Oscars of
yes,
the ice cream?
It's the Oscars of ice cream. That's exactly what it is.
So yeah. You won best picture.
We did. It was between 600 to 800 person blind taste test of the top ice cream and gelato makers in the country.
And this isn't your first rodeo winning. You won back in 19?
Yes, yes. We won back in 2019 as well, which has never been ever done in the history of the association to win twice. So it's pretty cool.
Wow. And you started this in 2014. Is that right?
That's right. That's right.
So this isn't beginner's luck. This isn't, I mean,
no,
you know
it's
what
not.
You're doing.
I think now I am. And maybe in 2014, I didn't have the full picture of what I was doing. But most people don't start businesses if they actually really know what it's going to entail, I don't think. So some of that ignorance is good in the early days.
Ignorance is bliss.
That's right. That's right.
And now 8 locations in mm-hmm. the St. Louis area. And if you're listening in the greater St. Louis area, even into Illinois, mm-hmm. you're not just, if you're not in St. Louis, don't stop listening. You ship, you do events, you cater, you can get the
Absolutely.
Naughty or nice creamery no matter where you're at in the U.S.
Yes, 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 yes. We ship all over the country. We're expanding into Edwardsville and we're getting ready to go regional. So we're excited to be moving into other big cities too.
Ooh, can we share yet or is that?
Not quite yet, but we're on our way.
When might we find out?
Probably late 2024,
okay.
You'll start seeing more announcements, and we'll announce our new locations planned. But we're excited. We're really excited to go national with Clementine's.
Well, and what I love just the spunkiness of it. First of all, one of your comments is serving up happiness one scoop at a time. I mean, ice cream solves everything.
It does. It does. There's a famous quote that said, if you want to please everyone in the world, go sell ice cream. And I'm like, yes. Yes, indeed, because I make everyone happy.
And that started, and we'll get into it, but when you were young, a mm-hmm. kid, and you kind of came back full circle. But the other things I love are some of the names of the ice cream that both the naughty, so the naughty is infused.
That's correct.
With some liquor, alcohol.
Wonderful, different, boozy, fun creations, yes.
Pink champagne sorbet.
Yes, it's delicious.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, and then some of the non, the right, you have vegan.
We
have
do.
Decadent coffee, gooey butter cake. I mean, I was reading Madagascar vanilla maple pumpkin crunch.
It's delicious.
Oh my gosh. It's stuff you can't find everywhere else.
Yep, we're definitely different and unique for sure.
So let's talk about, I mean, the what you bring to the area and Clementine's. You said you're different. Explain to everybody how you're different and why, just the buzz about Clementine's.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So first of all, we're a micro creamery, and there's only a handful of micro creameries in the country. And that is unique because of how we make the ice cream. So For those of you who don't know what a micro creamery is, think microbrewery for beer, but for ice cream. So you have to meet certain qualifications in order to be a micro creamery. One, you have to be small batch, meaning a real person stands in front of the ice cream machine and they spin the ice cream machine. They spin the ice cream. They make it, right? It's not made from some big continuous industrial freezer that's the size of a building where the ingredients go in one end and they come out the other. Like, a real person actually makes the ice cream, one. So it's small batch. Number two, everything in the ice cream is handcrafted. So if there's a pie, cake, or cookie, we make it, bake it, put it in it. We salt our own caramels. We candy our own pecans. We make our own hot fudge. Like, you come into the ice cream shop, there's whipped cream, we make it. So we make everything that goes into our ice cream. Number three, nothing in the ice cream can be artificial. So all of our ice cream base, there's no artificial flavors, colors, fillers, emulsifier, anything that goes into our product. So it's really pure, beautiful American dairy that goes in. All of our cows are RBST and hormone free. They're never fed corn. They're never fed soy. They're never fed animal byproduct. So we start out with literally the best dairy product that you can get in the country. And it's all natural. Number four, in order to be a micro creamery, you have to have less than 30% overrun in your ice cream. Now, overrun is a technical term. So that is the amount of air that they whip into the ice cream. For example, when you buy a pint of ice cream in the store or you go into your normal ice cream shop down the street, they have 100% overrun in their product, meaning, let's say you go into the grocery store and buy a pint of that stuff from Vermont. Let's say when you get that pint, 50% is ice cream and 50% is air, and that's 100% overrun. That's why if you feel our pints, they weigh so much heavier than most other ice cream company pints, is because we don't put all the air in. We have less than 30%. So they're putting 100% overrun and we're putting less than 30%. And ours is about 26 to 28%. So it's super heavy and it's not full of all of the air. And the big companies and other places put all the air into it, right? Because you get more product out of it by pumping more air into it. Well, that's not a philosophy that I believe in. And so that's one of the reasons why we're different. So the low overrun is super important. If you've ever walked into an ice cream place or whatever, and you scoop that ice cream and it instantly melts all over, it's because it's full of air. There's no actual ice cream there holding it together.
Wow, I had no idea.
Right, right. It's fascinating. And then last but not least, in order to be a micro creamery, you have to have more than 16% butter fat in your ice cream. And that is the fat that goes in that coats your tongue when you try it. So most ice creams at other places or in the grocery stores around 10%, we're between 16 to 18% butter fat. So as you know, when you had a bite of our ice cream, and 2 minutes later, you're still sitting there and you can taste the flavor in your mouth. That is directly from the butterfat. That is the flavor that's coating your mouth. It's super satiating. And that's why you don't have to eat a lot of our product either, right? You can have a small scoop or a couple of spoonfuls at a time out of the pint and be totally satisfied. It's because that high butterfat, it makes it a super high quality, super premium product.
It sounds like a challenge for me to have only a couple bites and put it back into the freezer.
But you can. You can. So those five things, those five qualifications make up a micro creamery. And there's only about 10 or 11 of us in the United States that make ice cream this way, right? And so you start out with that as a unique differentiator, and we really do make the best, highest quality ice cream in the country. And then you add on the naughty component, right? So that's our trade secret process for infusing the alcohol into the ice cream. And then even more of a differentiator and unique is we were really the first ones in the country to do vegan, non-dairy ice creams that taste great. Right? They take a long time to formulate and they're really expensive to make. But I really believe that ice cream is for everyone. And why shouldn't little Tommy have access to ice cream if he can't do dairy or he can't have gluten? Right? So it's my responsibility to make sure that we have ice cream for everyone. So we work really hard. So we have the naughty, which is the boozy, we have the nice, and then we have like this massive, crazy following for, cult following really, for all of our vegan non-dairy ice creams, because you can't tell that they're not dairy based.
So you mentioned to start off that starting your own business is challenging. Not only did you start your own business, but everything you just mentioned, I hear or think risk, 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 dollar sign, dollar sign, dollar sign.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, so much so, you know, I left a really high powered, high paying, like the dream job, right, in corporate America to start Clementines. Because I wanted to kind of own my own life and take it back. And I thought, oh, I've got some money in the bank. I've got some savings. I paid everything off for 2 years because I didn't want to be put in a position to have to make a bad decision because of money. And I always tell everyone that was like one of the best things that I ever did in starting my business and downsizing my life, right? Right, as I call it, right now, right sizing and downsizing, and really making sure when you're going to start a business that you can afford what you're doing. But even still, you know, I got 6 months in, and it cost twice as much. Everything took twice as long, and I come from really humble beginnings, and I don't come from a wealthy family, and so when I got in and I started Clementines, and I was, you know, like I said, 6-7 months in, and I was like, my money was gone, my savings was gone, and I was like, oh crud, what do I do now? I didn't have anybody, I didn't have a family to turn to, and so literally at that point, I had to take the biggest bet of my life and bet on myself, and I cashed out my 401k, which was the only significant savings that I had, and I said, okay, I'm gonna do this, and so, you know, I had to do that even. So really, when you talk about risk, 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 like I was all in. There was no fail. There is no fail. Like, I mean, I, you know, worked my whole life to get to a point, and I was starting at zero again with Clementines, and so it had to work.
Do you think if you had had a fallback, that if there was a family who could support you, or there was something somewhere, you would be where you're at today?
I don't know. Right? Maybe I'd be further ahead if I had access to more resources. But I think I've just always been I have an incredible work ethic, almost that no one could match. And I think because we've been scrappy and in the early days, I had to hustle and sell and work in the shops and make the ice cream and stay up all night and make deliveries. And, you know, in the beginning, I did it all, right? And then I could get my first employee and I took it from there. But I think, you know, we've just, you know, from the beginning, we've had just such a small team, and it was more about what we were building and what we were doing. And in the beginning, it was just, you know, I didn't think St. Louis had great ice cream. I didn't have an ice cream shop in my neighborhood. I really wanted that. And so when I started the business, I had this very romantic notion about, you know, leaving my corporate life. And, you know, in 2012, I traveled 262 days that year. I mean, it was absolutely crazy. Like, I woke up one day, I was 38 years old, I had no husband, I had no family, I had no kids, I never saw my family and friends, I lived in this big house and drove this big fancy car that I never could enjoy because I was never home, and I was like, what am I doing with my life? Like, this isn't living. But from the outside, everyone wanted my life, right?
Right, you were quote-unquote successful, that corporate, high-level job, yep. All those things you mentioned,
mm-hmm.
But it sounds like it was soul sucking, or there wasn't enough, or you were missing.
Yeah, I just you get to a certain level, in my experience in corporate America, where they own you and you have a really short leash, and they don't call it golden handcuffs for nothing, right? And you're at their whim and their beck and call, and it just wasn't the life that ultimately I thought I got to where I wanted. But it wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
What was that moment like? What was that realization? What was there something in particular, or you just woke up, or what was it that hit you?
Yeah. Actually, there was kind of a specific moment. I had been asked by a very senior and someone in the C-suite. It was a Friday. I had a date that Saturday, which was rare because I was never home, but I was very excited to have a date. And someone in the C-suite that Friday about 4 o'clock said, hey, I need you to be in Sao Paulo on Tuesday and do this customer meeting and have this deck done and pitch this. I can't go because my kid has a soccer game. And of course, you say, yes, of course. But I had a day, right? So I said, oh, that'd be great. Can I fly that? You know, whatever, I've got a date. And they just looked at me like I was crazy. Like, I don't care if you have a date or not. I'm basically telling you to do this and go do it. And so it was kind of in that moment that I was like, like, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. Right. And so my life didn't matter. It was in mm-hmm. that moment that I realized that my life, my future didn't matter. Yet I was working for, you know, someone and making them lots and lots of money and making great decisions and running their organization and all of these things, right? That you justify and tell yourself, I have all this responsibility. I do this, I do that, right? And then you're like, wow, they don't actually care about me. Right. And they make you think they do, but they don't actually. Right.
You're a number.
You're a number. And it's what you're doing for them. And so in that moment, I just said, you know, I want to own. I didn't know what it was at that time, but I wanted to own my own life and I wanted to own my own destiny in whatever that looked like, in whatever that meant. And it was just a couple months later that I was sitting with my girlfriends at Lake of the Ozarks having coffee one morning. And I just had a kind of the one of those open the kimono moments, and I just broke down, and I was like, I was crying, and I was miserable. And my girlfriend turned to me, and she said, "Quit." And I said, "What do you mean, quit?" And she said, "Quit." I said, "You don't quit corporate America, like, not where I was. You know, I was making more money in a year than my dad did in 10, right? You know, I'd." The MBA and the master, you know, I had all the things, and I'd gotten to that level. And I'm like, what would I do? And then my other girlfriend turns to me, and she's kind of starts chuckling. And I'm like, why are you laughing at me? Snot running down my face. All us ladies know what those ugly cry moments are, because we've all had them. And she starts laughing, and she goes, you know, you're always complaining St. Louis doesn't have great ice cream. Right, you make the best ice cream of anybody I've ever known, and you're always bitching our neighborhood doesn't have an ice cream shop. And like literally that weekend there in that moment, I had the epiphany, and we wrote my business plan and put together my deck, and 2 weeks later I resigned. And I've just said, okay, let's go.
So potentially if that moment, one, that moment with your leader boss didn't happen, and mm-hmm. you're not on that girls' trip, we don't have this amazing ice cream.
We don't have this. Clementines would not exist. No.
And it really goes all the way back to your youth, right? So it's funny. We do so many of these podcasts, and the journey is not straight. It's meanders. But if you go back to a former point in their life, it makes sense. All of your success in the corporate world, going to ice cream, it makes sense. If you think about, you know, the impact of ice cream in your youth.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I ended up in the food industry, right? So I'd worked in the ingredient side of the business. I worked for big CPG, but I ended up in the food space, which served me so well in starting Clementines because it gave me a leg up over so many other people because I've been in food plants. I understood food safety and scaling and manufacturing. And in my career, I did marketing strategy and brand for over 20 years. So you kind of put all those together and my love for ice cream. You know, when I was a kid, as I mentioned before, I come from pretty humble beginnings. And
paint that for me. Where? Because you're not from St. Louis.
I'm not from St. Louis. I'm originally from Denver and then Southern California. And I was raised in Southern California. But I think I was about 7 or 8 years old, and we went to church on Sundays. And one summer, I remember hearing other kids talk about going for ice cream. And of course, I ran over to my mom and I pulled on her dress and I said, "Hey, they're going for ice cream. Do we get a go?" She's like, "No, honey, I'm sorry, we can't do that." Well, that wasn't going to stop me. So next Sunday, I asked the same question. And you know, when you're a kid, you don't realize you're not supposed to make your parents feel bad for being poor, right? Just as a little kid, you just know that they get to do something that you don't. But, you know, we also had a really big family. I have an Irish-Italian family. And it was me and my parents and my four brothers and grandparents. Like, we had a big family. So in church, we weren't like the most popular family, because you're not going to invite 9 people over on a Friday night for dinner. Like, you're like inviting an army at that point. So we kind of always stuck to ourselves in the community, I guess you could say. But my family was loved. Like, so my dad was always working on the church. My mom was always cooking for the old ladies, or, you know, doing whatever. So our family was loved. But, you know, we were that family where 2 days before Thanksgiving, we'd always find groceries on our stoop. Right? Because we just didn't have very much means. And so, you know, we didn't get invited to people's houses. We weren't friends with people. You know, that's just, we just kind of did our own thing. But my parents were loved, and we had a wonderful big family. So one Sunday after church, we drove home and we stopped at a garage sale, because that's where we bought our clothes and our stuff. Like, when you come from humble beginnings, that's what you do. And my mom found an old hand crank ice cream maker for $2, and she bought it. And she's like, okay, we're gonna go home and make ice cream. Because I think every Sunday that summer I hounded her about going for ice cream, and we never could because we couldn't afford it for that many people. So she's like, okay, let's get home, change your clothes, do your chores, we're gonna come back to the kitchen, we're gonna make ice cream. And so we started making ice cream as a family, like every Sunday, because we could afford to do that. Well, word kind of had gotten out in the church that we were making homemade ice cream. And so all these families started asking if they could come to our house to make the ice cream. Well, my family definitely couldn't afford it to make it for everyone. But what started happening is one family would bring the milk, another family would bring the cream, somebody else would bring the strawberries. And so before you knew it, we had all these families who were coming to like our rinky-dinky little house, you know, in our backyard, and we were making ice cream. And so literally as a kid, my whole sense of community changed because of an ice cream cone, right? We had all these friends, they came to our house, we started getting invited to their, right? And so like ice cream changed my life. So it has been so significant to me, kind of, I always say ice cream has changed my life twice, once as a kid, right? Because it gave me this new sense of community. And then a second time as an adult, when I started Clementine's, because it also changed my life and gave me a new sense of community. And so ice cream has always been with me. We made ice cream as a family on Sundays, and my mom made it. And unfortunately, my mom passed away when I was 21. So like, I took that over and it became my thing. Right? It became my hobby. So some people golf, and some people scrapbook, and some people play tennis. Like, I always made ice cream my whole life growing up. And that's something as a family, when we would come back together, we would do. And it was kind of a special thing for us. So, you know, ice cream was my hobby and my passion through life. And then I ended up in the food industry, right? And I ended up, you know, working in protein, you know, and just so many things led me to ice cream, even though I didn't know it, that I could leverage.
How did you go into the food industry? So you go to college, you get degrees. I mean, how did you, was it intentional? Hey, I'm going to go into the food industry, or was happenstance unknowingly?
No, you know, it was happenstance. You know, I didn't start college until late. I was a non-traditional student. I started my bachelor's when I was 25. So I started much, much later than everyone else in life. I was in high tech early on in my career. And so in coming out of a business school and graduate school, I ended up getting a job. I had multiple offers coming out of business school, but the offer I took was most intriguing because it was in the food space, in ingredients. And that was like super cool for me to explore and to do something different. And so I just kind of fell into the food space and just loved it. And I'm a foodie and a cook and a chef and all those things already. And so that was seeing the inside world of the food industry was very intriguing and exciting for me.
It's interesting, you know, you said non-traditional student. So many people think, again, you have to have this path. You come out of high school, you go to college right away, you work your way up the ladder, you have kids, don't have, whatever, that's success. That's what will make you happy. But even from an early age, your path was non-conventional, non-traditional.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I've never followed any normal path ever for anything my whole life.
But it's worked for you.
So somehow. Somehow, some way. Yeah, it's worked for me. I think being open to opportunity and seeing things and taking risks. I think I've taken a lot of risks in my life. Now, maybe calculated risks or educated risks. But I took a lot of uncomfortable chances in life, and it's paid off for me. I think you have to really be open to the world and the opportunities that life presents, and you have to be willing to be brave enough and make the sacrifice and have the courage to take them.
What were those? You mentioned cashing in your 401k and all that. Are those the examples, risks you're talking about, or are there others?
Yeah, I think there are others. I worked in technology when I was younger in my career, and that was something that was a space that nobody knew anything about.
Around what year?
So 1997, 98.
We're talking kind of going into that dot-com.
Absolutely. And I was right in it. I was employee number 8 at the first internet service provider in Southern California. I remember being a product manager when DSL was being invented. Like old school, like email, and people didn't know what it could do for you in the internet and all that sort of thing. So like I took jobs, and I was working in a space that really people had never heard of, and they didn't know what it was going to do. And it was kind of a risky place to be at that point. But thank goodness I did.
Sounds like a theme in your life. Like it's new. I don't know everything about it, but I'm going to figure it out.
That's kind of what I've done with my whole life. Right? You figure it out.
And I think a lot of the successful people, right, it's you don't have all the answers to start. It's not going to be perfect. So don't wait for perfection and go into spaces that maybe are outside your comfort zone, but have the confidence, I can figure it out. Mm-hmm. I'll do this. I got this.
Well, and you know, I think there's something to be said when you come from humble beginnings. Like I've never been afraid of it, right? Like once you come from a place, you know what it is, and I know how to survive and live through that, right? And so I want to work hard and make sure I never get back there, but you're also never afraid of it. And so the ability to be flexible and nimble and work hard and do all of these things that I think sometimes people who are born with a lot more privilege and don't have any idea what life is like on the other side, or you know, I mean, honestly, to this day, and it happens, yeah, still a couple times a week, but you know, first thing when I wake up in the morning, I think to myself, I can't starve and I don't want to be homeless, so what do I need to do to make sure that doesn't happen today? I mean, that's deep, right? Yeah. And so those are drivers. Like when you come from adversity and you come from places where you've had to work really hard to, you know, get through anything and earn a better place in life, and no one's handed you anything, and you have to pay for everything yourself your whole life and figure it out and be scrappy and do the hustle and like work 2 and 3 jobs, right? I think that gives you I don't know if it's a strength or a something. I'm not sure what it is, but I'm incredibly capable of so much more than I think, but I'm also not afraid of the other stuff, right?
Yeah, my husband and I talk about that a lot.
I don't know if it's grit. I don't know if it's... But, you know, when I just decided to start Clementine's, I sold the big house and I downsized everything and I paid, you know. I don't think I bought a new piece of clothing for maybe 5 years. And I didn't take a paycheck for 3 years when I started my business, right? So you learn to sacrifice a lot, give up a lot, right? And people who've never been without have a hard time comprehending what that would look like. But if you remember what that's like, it's not so hard to do if you know that you're doing something in the short term for a long-term gain.
Well, and especially with the success you had already, right? So you'd started there, you knew you had success, okay, you're gonna take a step back, but you know you can get yourself there.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And it's, yeah, just that betting on yourself, that there's a certain knowledge that you gain from doing that that can't necessarily teach in school.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I like I said, I started college when I was late. I put myself, I got master's, got another, and then I got my MBA. You know, I did all of these things and I along the way so that I knew at that point, yeah, I may not get an, you know, I always thought, okay, what's the worst thing that could happen? Literally, what's the worst thing that could happen? I move home, live in my parents' basement, and I would have failed at my business, right? If that was the worst thing. Okay, well, fine. You eat some humble pie. You tried something. If you fail, great. And you start over, right? It's not about what happens to you. It's what you do when that thing happens, right? You pick yourself up by the bootstraps and you just move on and you try it again. And so I was okay with, okay, if I fail, right? You know, but by then I was educated. I had this amazing career. So yeah, I might not been able to go out and get another job where I was making $500,000 a year, but I could go make $100,000 a year with where I was, right? And work my way back, you know, so I knew that I was going to be okay no matter what. I'd gotten educated. I had this great career. I was really good at what I did. And so those are those risks, right? That you're like, I can take these steps back because I know I'll get up there, or get back there. But I think, you know, at some point, at least for me, it was, I've done all the things that I said that I wanted to do. I got to those levels. I traveled around the world. I had this, you know, I did all the things, but I wasn't happy and I needed to be happy. I wanted to be happy. And if that meant financially, I took a, you know, it, all those other things didn't matter if I could really just be happy.
And happy and joy, I think it's hard to get your arms, your mind around. What is that? For everybody, it's different.
Sure.
So
sure.
What do you think was, I know we talked a little bit about that, but what was it that just, I'm not happy, this is what I'm missing, and why?
You know, it was that next place in life, right? I wanted to be married. I wanted to have a family. I wanted to have more control over my life. I think when you go through so much adversity when you're young, you're not in control of anything. You're not in control of your life. You're a child, right? And so you grow up and you figure out how to empower yourself to take more control of your life and your destiny. And I think I was on this journey to take the ultimate control of my life and be able to dictate what that would be.
With some help from your girlfriends.
Thank goodness, yes. Yeah, yeah.
But I think every successful person in life, right, has a coach, has an accountability partner, has, you know, that person who's going to cheer you on, but also that person that's going to look at you and say, stop it.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. And I think for me, that was the driving factor, is I wanted to own my own life. I loved ice cream. I'm so passionate about the power of ice cream and for what it does for people. And St. Louis didn't have good ice cream. And I wanted to, you know, I had come to St. Louis kicking and screaming. I did not want to move to St. Louis at all. And within 6 months, I said, I found my one true love, and that's the city of St. Louis. So I'd also fallen in love with this amazing city and wanted to give something back because it really did changed my life so much moving to St. Louis. I never felt so attached to a place, and I never felt so welcome, and this was just as a person moving here into the city, into Lafayette Square, and meeting great people who turned into lifelong friends. You know, it was this, you know, I've always said in a weird way, Clementine's is my love letter to the city.
Right? Oh, wow.
Because in the beginning it was for me, and then over time it has evolved. Is Clementine's isn't about me anymore. It's all about the city. It's all about my team. It's about the jobs we're creating. It's about the cool ice cream flavors. It's about putting St. Louis on the map nationally in the culinary world for ice cream, right? So it's Clementine's has nothing to do with me anymore, other than it provides me a livelihood, but like it's so much bigger.
It almost sounds like you had to go through the things, like you said, the contacts and the connections in the corporate world that you built to then jump over to the ice cream world and know you were in plants. I mean, would you go back and change anything?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Everything that I did in my career, set me up for why we're so successful now. Had I not worked in marketing and brand and strategy all those years and honed my skills, and I was really an expert at that, would not Clementine's wouldn't be where it was at without it. Had I not run big business and had P&L responsibility, you know, and gotten the MBA, and, you know, did all of the things and worked in many different jobs and worked for many different people, some I loved, some I didn't, some I couldn't stand, right? You don't know how to be a good leader until you work for some really bad leaders, mm-hmm. right? You can't be a good manager until you work for some really bad managers and know what, you know, what you don't want, and how not to treat people. So I think all of my success now and everything that I've done and that I'm building in Clementine's absolutely had everything to do with all of those steps in my life that I had to take to get here.
What were some of the either positive things or challenges and obstacles that taught you the most or helped you to succeed the most?
You know, people, right? Because we're all learning and growing and evolving as people. You know, in my corporate career, I managed MBAs for a long time, and we're all alike, right? We're all A-type overachievers, motivated by the same thing. Like we're a certain type. And when I started Clementine's, my entire workforce was nothing like MBAs, right? Motivated by different things, I just totally different. And in the first couple years of the business, I was really frustrated and I wasn't a great leader and I made a ton of mistakes. I fired a lot of people and made a lot of people cry, right? Because I was used to a certain type of workforce and I had a different one. And it wasn't until probably year four when I woke up and I realized that, oh, they're not the problem. I'm the problem. And so once I realized that I was the problem and shifted my frame of reference on how I led, interact, manage, motivate, inspire, like, it all changed.
Was there a particular moment, experience that brought you to that?
No, I think I was so tired of being frustrated all the time and I didn't understand why they didn't listen and I couldn't understand like how these, it was just so much, I just didn't understand and I felt like I was holding myself back and my turnover was higher than I wanted it to be. And I think I just, at some point you have to look within yourself and say, you know, what do they say? Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I think I just woke up one day and I said, you know what? I have to change. I'm the problem. You know, and thankfully, I'm a member of EO, which is the Entrepreneurs Organization. And so I've had lots of wonderful mentors and advisors and formates that, as I started Clementine's, that also helped and coached me along the way, other entrepreneurs who'd grown their businesses from nothing. And so that also helped, right? When they're like, yeah, maybe you're the problem too. Maybe you should think about this and think about this. So I think it was like this combination of things that kind of came together. And literally once I realized that was it and I just started, I personally had to go through the growth and the humility and the changing and the learning different perspectives and truly understand being what inclusive means and truly understand what it is to think differently and understand different perspectives and buy into what makes other people tick and what motivates them, everything changed for me.
It's like almost shedding that corporate story.
Absolutely.
About I have a kid's soccer game, you have a date, I don't care, you need to go. It almost as though the tables had turned and now you needed to shed that way of thinking.
Yeah.
What'd you do? You said I had to go internal, I had to think differently. You talked about EO, and which Jana Franklin, thankfully, I told her what we were doing with this podcast. She's like, I've got some great people you need to meet and have on the show. So I can already tell that group is a very, you know, collaborative, mm-hmm. camaraderie, help each other out kind of group. What are, whether it's that in more detail or other things that you did to work on yourself that made a difference?
I think it therapy helps when you have to work through some of your own issues. So therapy is great. I think EO was a huge help for me. I think it was just trying things different right? Like, okay, here's a situation. This is how I would normally approach it. What's the opposite of how I would normally approach it? And then I would go and literally try the opposite. And I was like, oh, wow, that worked. Or that got the desired result that I was looking for. You know, I read lots of books. I just had to try different things that were way out of my comfort zone.
Favorite book?
I love Setting the Table by Danny Meyer. His version of hospitality is pretty amazing. So many books, though. I wouldn't even know where to start. But it was really just saying, what could be the most uncomfortable thing I could do that is not what I would think to do in this situation? And I would literally write it down. And then once I wrote it down and I saw it, I said, okay, I'm going to go try that. And it worked. Sometimes it worked. Sometimes it didn't. But sometimes it worked. And I think you start training yourself to be comfortable in uncomfortableness.
Mm.
Right? Train yourself to be uncomfortable and know that, oh, this is going to hurt, or this is uncomfortable, or this is hard. Right? Or, you know, you may think something in your head, but what comes out of your mouth has to be this. Right. And so you practice those things and eventually you get good at it and you start to see that in the beginning it's intentional actions, and then you start to shift your mindset to really empathizing, understanding, getting where other people are coming from and what's it important to them, and once you kind of start making it important to you, then it's not so much a decisive action, it becomes second nature. And so I've definitely over time become a kinder, softer, gentler human being, because in corporate America sometimes you don't have the opportunity to do that, right? It's rough and tumble and competitive and hard, and you know, you're trying to, you know, claw your way up, right? And so It's different now because I don't have to do that anymore.
And reading all, I mean, again, you've grown so much, so many shops. Sounds like a lot of that stuff you talked about earlier, turnover, all that's much lower. And just by reading everything about Clementine's, it seems like it's just a different culture and a different vibe.
Totally. I mean, I'm sure if you'd talk to employees from my first couple years, I'm sure they'd be like, oh, she was a nightmare. She had no idea what she was doing, because I didn't, right? I worked in big corporate America where I had teams of people to do everything for me, right? If I had a money question, I went to the finance team. If I had an operations question, I went to the operations team. And then you start your own business and you're literally doing everything, right? And so you figure things out and you're making decisions and it's all your money. And so it's just a different way to look at things. Then if you'd say now, like, we have really low turnover and people love to work for us and we have really long-term employees now, considering our hospitality space and great benefits. And, you know, it's a much different place now than it was in the early days.
How do you maintain that with so many locations?
Culture, people, getting great team. I have a great leadership team that I'm building and that I've built. And you hire people who are smarter than you, better than you, kinder than you, better people leaders. You know, you hire people who are better than you at everything, to where I get to continue to learn from them and admire them. But they're really incredibly capable. And so you set up the structures and the foundation and the scaling and all of that with a lot of thought and intentionality, I guess, a lot of intentionality about how do we want to grow this and keep the culture and make sure it's wonderful, right? But it's also ice cream, so, right? People are happy, right? It's not like a restaurant where somebody can screw up your order or the food comes out wrong, it's hot or cold, or right? It's ice cream. So the guest coming through that door, you know that their life is going to be better. They know that their life is going to be better the moment they step over the magic threshold, right?
And when you walk into an ice cream shop, it's like you think of Willy Wonka or something. It's that alternate paradise where,
sure,
especially how you described how you make all the ingredients and at the beginning, how you throw everything. I mean, just a different planet.
And it extends into the shop experience as well. You know, so we're not just an ice cream shop where it's very transactional. I mean, you come into Clementine's and it's an organoleptic experience, right? It's very experiential, right? It's what you see, it's what you hear, it's what you smell, it's what you say, right? And so you're coming in, you're getting an education, you evoke a sense of warmth and belonging and nostalgic and hip and cool, and you have the best ice cream, and you have the coolest merchandise, and you want to be seen there, and you want to take your friends there, and you want to be the good dad of the weekend and take your kids for ice cream because they can get maple bourbon ice cream and the kids can get ice cream. And now you won points with your wife because you took the kids out and gave her a break, and you're the best dad because you're spending time with your kids and you're getting boozy ice cream. It's the best. So, you know, providing that kind of experience and atmosphere for people, it's pretty amazing too. So you not only have the best ice cream in the country, but you also have the best retail experience.
And in that situation, if you really want points with your wife, bring a pint home
that too.
For her, so
absolutely.
You don't leave her out. But that sounds, if you don't have that in a commercial or an ad, that sounds like a perfect one. In the new year, if you want to be the best husband ever, here you go. Here's
right.
how to do it. We have mapped out the total plan for you. And through a lot of your, I just love the extra oomph to everything about Clementine's. It says flavor temptress.
Yes, my title.
Yeah,
so
the
fun.
Different, just the choice of words. You said it, that whole experience. It seems like every little thing is intentional. And how do we bring it back to the vibe that we want to create, but also the culture, both for the people that work there, but for the everybody, that dad coming in with their kids.
Yeah, and you want them to experience that without knowing any of it. Right? They just know that they leave there feeling great, wonderful, their family's happy, and they have great ice cream.
And, you know, you can do that because you've driven into something that you're passionate about, that you love, that has meant so much to you in your entire life, versus being in that corporate culture. It just, you wouldn't be able to live in that joy and happiness and share it with everyone around you.
Well, and I think you touch on a good point there too, is that like, I live it, we live it. Like there's no like, oh, I have a product or this is my business, right? Like I love ice cream. I'm so passionate about ice cream and how we make it and the people who work for us and what we do in the community and what we're doing in this, like through and through. There's anyone who knows me will say, oh yeah, she's all in for ice cream. And I think that also makes a difference, right? When you're really, really passionate about something and you really believe in what you're doing, and there's nothing stronger than the power of ice cream in this world and what it does for people. And I'm all in on that. So I think that also is easier because people, like, they know me, they like, it's, I'm super authentic about it. There's no BS.
Right. I mean, they always say, you know, do what you love and you'll never work a day in your life. And, you know, it's that passion. And I think you've done it in such a unique and different way that with all the work, like we talked about, the work and the grit and the, I'm going to throw myself into this, I'm going to bet on myself, that it allowed that combination, that recipe of all of those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it makes sense that it's successful and you're doing well. I mean, even just sitting here and listening to you, it's like, yeah, ice cream's awesome.
It is. You know, it's funny because ice cream is the most emotionally powered food out there.
How so? Can you explain that?
So when you think of coffee, maybe a second, but like when you think of ice cream and you think back to your first memory, you're with your family, you're with your friends, it was your first sweet treat. Like there's so much joy and happiness tied into every memory of ice cream that someone can just look at an ice cream cone and get warm fuzzies throughout their whole body. Right?
Oh, that smell of the ice
the
cream.
The smell, cone. The mm-hmm. taste, you know what's coming. It just, the joy, like the comfort, right? And so if you look at a carrot, you don't feel the same way, right? If you look at a donut, you don't feel the same way. You don't, you know, look at a hamburger and think the same way, or even a cupcake. Like ice cream is the one thing that like people like feel warm and it's so good. It's and so many memories.
Melting in the ooziness where it just melts into every part of your...
But it's all about the memories and the people yeah. you're with and all those things, right? And so ice cream is really the only food that does that. And so that's it's so easy to get behind that and to understand it and get it. And, you know, we live in this world now where everyone has an iPhone, an iPad, an iWatch, this device and that device. We live in this world where we're so connected, yet the thing that we yearn for the most is to be connected to each other. And guess what? When you're holding an ice cream cone, you're not holding a phone.
That would be interesting. I bet if you looked at the places, your shops, your stores, mm-hmm. probably not a lot of people on their phones.
They're not.
Probably phones down, talking, laughing, enjoying, making
They're
sure nobody's
really connecting.
Dripping.
You're creating memories, whether that's together or by yourself. You know, we have lots of solo guests that come in after work or lunch break in the afternoon, or they're like, I just need to get away, and they come in and you can see them. They get their cone and they're just sitting there and they're like, I deserve this, and they're just eating their ice cream cone, right? So even if you're creating a memory or giving yourself some self-love, as I like to say, and sitting there having an ice cream on your own, it's a beautiful thing.
So we, you know, with this podcast, you know, obviously there's challenges for everybody out there, but sometimes being female through the last couple decades, there it brings unique challenges. Anything that, again, people look at you now, sick, you know, 8 places, you're continuing to grow, you're shipping, you're winning all these awards. Wow. You know, she's so successful. But I have to imagine there were a lot of obstacles, maybe mindset issues, internal, external, that you had to grapple with, overcome.
Oh, there's always challenges. And being a female in business, despite the fact that we're in 2023, there is a lot still out there to overcome. I mean, I had a banker within the past year ask me if I was going to get married, settle down, and have kids. And I said, why? Why does that matter? And he said, well, you know, sometimes women tend to take their eye off the ball on their business when they decide to have kids. Just sit with that for a moment.
I need an ice cream cone to be able to...
Can you imagine in 2023 that a regional president of a bank would actually ask me that?
What was your response?
I smiled and I said, I don't think that matters, but I think this meeting is finished. And that was the best thing I could do, or I would have told him to go take a hike in probably right. not the nicest way, because my filters are far less than they used to be now.
For sure.
But that's a very real challenge. Like, that actually still happens, right? I mean,
right,
mind-blowing that people still have the audacity. You know, it's one thing for people to, like, think things, right? Because we all think things at a moment. It's another thing to actually have it come out your mouth in 2023. But that's you know, I love that Taylor Swift song, If I Were a Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, after that meeting, I got in the car and I played that song over and over and over, because I was like, wow, I can't believe in this day and age that, you know, those kinds of questions are still asked. I think people who have a strong financial record, who has an incredibly growing business, who's made profit. We've been a profitable business every year since I've been in business. And still to have those kinds of questions asked, mind-blowing.
And it all goes back to whether it's male, female, whatever you want to call it. It's just judgment based on somebody else's thoughts, beliefs. But I do feel like we're placed more into that space being women in the professional world. Oh, you know, you're going to let somebody else raise your kids, or... You know, you're doing a female podcast. Well, this must be negative about men, or you must be a feminist to be doing something like that. It has nothing to do about it with it. You know, it's me trying to do a great thing and, you know, build knowledge and community and awareness, and then
fill your bone bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's important too. And, you know, I think it's rising tides raises all ships. Right? And so.
we have to.
But I think that's a good lesson for everyone, is to be really aware of, well, a couple lessons in that. One, don't back down. You know, stand your ground, be confident. You know, I'm done with, here's what it is, and we're done. But then also be really aware of who you have around you. And, you know, that people with maybe that mindset, it's just going to hold you back. So we're done. I don't need you. I'll find what I need wherever else. You
know, and I've always said no is a gift, right? No is a gift, because that gives me the freedom to go find the right yes, the right partner, the right banking partner, the right investor, whatever that is, right? Like, I am so okay with that.
And is that both hearing no, but also learning how to say no to somebody else?
Absolutely. Absolutely. No is like so empowering, right? As women, we want to say yes a lot. Yes to the opportunity. Yes, yes, yes. But when you start saying no, that's even more empowering, because you're choosing to do the right things, the things that make the most sense, that don't, you know, empty your bucket, and that are the right things for your business. I think when you're early on in your business, you say yes to a lot because you need to and you have to. And then you get to a certain point, you're like, oh, I don't have to say yes anymore. Of like, oh, I don't want that piece of business because it's not profitable, or because you're a jerk to my employees, or, right, that's going to tax my employees too much, right? That's not worth that profit, right? And so that becomes more empowering. And then you actually end up building a better business that way too.
Probably on a lot of fronts, you're that filter to say, no, my employees, my business is more important, more valued than doing business with you, because that toxicity will hurt them.
Heck yeah. My employees are too important to me to deal with customers who are not nice to them or don't treat them with respect.
I think you hear a lot that scarcity mindset versus abundance. So in that mindset, that situation, having the courage to say, I'm going to say no to you because something is coming. The right thing is coming. And I just have to let go, have trust and faith.
And absolutely, I've always said that. I said the ice cream gods are smiling down upon us, because when one door closes, another one opens. And just being ready for those opportunities, right? You know, I always say, being courageous is being scared and doing it anyway, right? And saying, no, I don't want this piece of business, or no, I'm not going to deal with you, customer, anymore because you're not nice to my people and you're 30% of my business. That's a huge risk and that's scary, right? But being scared and doing it anyway because it's the right thing to do, right? It's, you know, standing by an employee that, you know, is berated or accused of things on social media or whatever, but you know they're a good employee, right? It would be very easy to fire an employee because of some rumor on social media than to stand by them and say, no, this is the right thing to do, and to do it anyway. So, you know, there's a lot of things that happen in business that you have to make choices. And at the end of the day, I have to look at myself in the mirror every night, and I have to know that I'm doing the right thing, the best thing that I can, given what I know and within my ability at the time. And you just do that.
What got you to that point? Because that sounds amazing. And I feel like as I've gotten into my mid-40s, more of that is coming. Wow, what if I had known all that, or been, is it just time, experience?
I think maybe it's time and it's experience, and you get to a certain age and you have so fewer flips to give. Can I say that in the podcast? Can I say that? Yeah. Okay. You have so fewer flips to give that it, you know, it's you become more self-actualized maybe, or it's just not worth it anymore.
Right. Right. Yeah, less what the Joneses or social media says, and you build more strength from within, or more comfort in your own skin, or
yeah. And you have to take care of you and your family. Right.
Right. That's a theme.
And my family, I don't have kids. I wasn't blessed with kids, right? So my family are my teams and my employees and what we're doing. So, you know, I'm the big mama bear, you know.
But I think in the idea of what a special experience and ice cream that you're making, that's your baby, your gift.
Yeah, it's and you know, we're a local business here in St. Louis too, and it's also like getting that message out that like support local businesses, right? Because we're supporting you too, right? And so, yeah, you know, we cost, you know, an ice cream costs more than going to Dairy Queen, but you're getting a better product, but you're also help supporting somebody in your city that wouldn't otherwise be too.
That's a great idea for the small business. Plus, just, you know, the environment that you're building, you're not just getting a number, pull a number, get your ice cream, walk out. It's that experience, mm-hmm. that memory with your kids.
And having a local ice cream shop in your neighborhood that you can walk to or drive to around the corner, right? Having those things accessible to you. I mean, St. Louis is this amazing city where we have neighborhoods and we have things that are more accessible to us. So we've got to support those businesses so that they stay there.
What's next for the ice cream? Everything you do, people can come visit you.
Sure.
You ship. They can order online.
Yep, we ship all over the country when people want to, what do you get somebody who has everything? Clementine's ice cream. But yeah, we ship all over the country. We do private catering events, weddings, bar and bat mitzvahs, birthday parties, corporate events, and, you know, picnics, what have you. And we sell to a bunch of hotels and restaurants and venues around St. Louis too. But yeah, we're trying to be out there in the community for sure.
So it sounds like if you want just your own different experience, maybe a first date with somebody, bring the kids there, it's a good place to go. Plus, if you want to build a unique event or experience, bring in something like Clementine's with all these great flavors and mm-hmm. differentiators.
And we have two really cool events. We do ice cream for breakfast. It's every February. And so the whole family, everyone, they get dressed up in they actually have to come in their pajamas. Oh. You come in your pajamas, you get dressed up. It's a fun thing to do in the winter. And so we've created this wonderful tradition around ice cream for breakfast day. It's in February. And then in July, we have National Ice Cream Day, which is also another fun reason to get out and celebrate.
And you're the best picture Oscar winner,
yes,
more than once,
yes.
Never been done, and you've only been around since 2014. So of all those years, you've going math world, you've almost won 20% of the time mm-hmm. that you've been there. So it has to be a good visit.
Yeah, it's good. The ice cream's amazing.
Anything else that we didn't talk about or share today that would be great to tips, tidbits, things you learned along the way?
There's so much, but you know, be good to yourself, trust yourself, and be willing sometimes to take a couple steps back to get you to your ultimate goal. Be willing to make the sacrifice, and if you're not, that's okay too. You know, I have a lot of women who want to meet with me, who want to start their own business, and when I meet with them, I say, are you willing to give up all of your creature comforts for years, right? Are you willing to sell your big house and turn in your fancy car and do all of that to get where you ultimately want to go? And if the answer is no, that's okay, but then don't go do it, right? And so I think being really real with yourself and what you're willing to do and sacrifice or not do to start your own business or become an entrepreneur, I think sometimes it's glorified, right? And people don't talk about how really hard it is, right? And the really tough years, you know, I think people even sometimes see me too and they're like, oh, you're so successful, and they see me now. Well, they don't realize how many years of like, I still live in an 800 square foot house. Most of my employees live in bigger homes and have, you know, I still live very small because I want to be able to do more for people. But in those early years, there were times that like, I ate my ice cream for protein, right? Like, when I had no money, right, trying to, you know, pay everything and do everything else first, there were like some lean years, right? And I invited myself to my friend's house for dinner a lot of nights.
Especially those friends who told you to quit.
Absolutely. And they were all like, come on over, I got extra, you know? So, I mean, there's lots to think about in doing that, in thinking about starting a business or a company. So be prepared for what it's going to take you, because not everybody can do it, and that's okay. But just being real and know yourself, what you can do and what you can't do.
yeah, that's, I mean, like you said, get real, strip it all away and get down deep inside. What are you passionate about? What do you want to share? What are your talents that you can share with the world? And then how deep are you willing to go to make it happen?
And you know, I don't make what I used to make. I still don't after 9 years. And you know what? I'm okay with that because I'm so happy and I own my life and I'm having so much fun, right? And so changing my life in certain ways, you know, maybe it will come someday. But knowing that, like, I've changed my life and that's okay is such a beautiful thing. Like, really finding that joy and that happiness that's not just fleeting for that moment, but that's, like, long-lasting, super important.
Get up every day.
And love what you do.
I don't know that I can end this any better way. So, finding you, I mean, again, there's the website. There's all the different locations. What's the best way to find out information all about
our socials, for mm-hmm. sure. We're on Instagram and Facebook and TikTok to some extent. But yeah, you can absolutely find us on Instagram and social media and at www.clementinescreamery.com.
And you're on LinkedIn, all of your awards and just unbelievable tidbits are out there too. So following you there,
Thank you. Yeah. I forget about LinkedIn all the time. Huh? I just started posting stuff.
Probably this year. Business world is, and your customer base and your people are on the other social medias. So that's where you should be.
Yeah. That's where I should be. Well, thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Thank you for joining. I know you're a busy woman and I appreciate it, but I know someone out there is going to pick up so many things from this story and appreciate you being real and sharing it all.
Thank you so much.
This concludes another episode of the She Lift Project podcast. To hear more episodes of the show, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And to learn more about our mission of helping women reach higher levels of success, visit SheLiftProject.com and sign up to receive the latest news, ebooks, videos, and more.